Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week with Dr. T, our weekly news program that's posted now every Monday morning at 11 a.m., and it's available for you to watch whenever you have time. We are now doing this daily, every day, Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. There is a podcast from us, and there's also an early morning post every day on our Substack for a little thing for you to read. My regular Substack is on Saturday on Eye on the Evidence, and Sunday is Walking on God. And we also have hoped that by now, all of you have joined our new Tenpenny Prime membership. We have three educational levels and benefits for those that are members. There's a topical white paper that I write, a recorded educational presentation, and then the last Wednesday night of the month, we invite an expert in the field of the topic that we're discussing, and we have an event called Ask the Expert. Now, if you're a Tenpenny Prime member, this is part of your membership. If you're not a member, you can sign up. If you hear a particular topic that you want to listen to, like this for the month of April, it was on reproductive health and infertility, both male and female. You can actually buy a seat at the webinar for $49, but it's yours free and it's included in your monthly membership with all the other benefits. And if you're not a member yet and you'd like to join us and support all the work that we do, go to shoptenpenny.net. shoptenpenny.net. Hover over the membership tab. You'll see all the wonderful things that we have for the members, all the webinars we've done, the parasite webinars, all the different webinars that we've done are there for you to peruse. And it's an educational opportunity for you on a lot of different topics. So we want to make this year, 2025, the year of knowledge, empowerment, and action. And for those of you who are already members, we are greatly appreciative. It's your monthly support that helps us to do all the things that we do. And with that, before I introduce to you today's special guest that really doesn't need much of an introduction, we are going to take a really quick break. But I've got with me in the studio today, Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, and we are going to talk all things vaccines, and we're going to be right back. Don't go away. Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant, you can take it when you're nursing, you can give it to little children, you can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out. The heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch with in our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years. Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off. Well, welcome back, everyone. Let me introduce to you today's special guest, my really dear friend, a comrade in arms fighting this vaccine battle, Dr. Suzanne Humphreys. Dr. Suzanne Humphreys is a medical doctor who is board certified in internal medicine and also in nephrology. She's worked for years traveling the world, revealing the truth about the problems caused by vaccines. Her groundbreaking book, Dissolving Illusions, took the world by storm, exposing the truth about smallpox, polio, measles, and more. She continues to dispel the myths surrounding vaccination with her co-author on another groundbreaking book that was just released not very long ago as a 10th anniversary edition of Dissolving Illusions, The Forgotten History, and a companion book that is equally sizable. Both of these books are over 600 pages. They are a compendium of information that every researcher needs to have a set of these books in their library. And I was so blessed, super, super blessed, to have Suzanne be able to write the foreword of my new book that's just been released, Zero Accountability in a Failed System, How Big Pharma Weaponizes Vaccines, Public Health, and the Law. So we've got all kinds of things to talk about here today. Suzanne, thank you so much for coming and joining me on my show. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you. It's great to see you again.
So tell us a little bit about the Rogan Experience from a guest perspective.
Oh, well, It was really a nice experience, actually. So I went to the studio, and I can't tell you where that is because I agreed not to. I guess all the guests agree not to talk about where it is. And I was immediately greeted at the door by Mr. Rogan, who shook my hand and congratulated me and said that it was a great book and he enjoyed reading it and he read it in the sauna and he listened to it while he was driving. And I actually, after talking to him, I think that he read the book actually more than once and he really comprehended everything in it, which I can tell you that a lot of hosts that host me maybe have skimmed through it a little bit, but man, he really digested it to the max. And he remembered some details in there, some of them that I actually didn't remember. And you know how that is when you
I
write a
do
book
know how that is. Yes, I do.
that big.
Very much.
So I kind of, he goes, oh, come on into the studio. And so I just followed him in. And it's the man cave. So you go into the man cave, and he apologized for the smell of cigars because there were a couple of one cigar unsmoked and one partly smoked and an ashtray sitting there. But I don't really mind the smell of cigars, actually. I find it much preferable over cigarettes. But he didn't smoke while I was in there, and he was extremely respectful of me. And so he knows his guests and he responds to his guests accordingly. So, if he's got one of his buddies in there, yeah, they're going to have a little whiskey and maybe smoke a few other things, and there'll be smoke in the air. But he didn't do any of that with me in there. And he was such a gentleman, and he's so smart. And I mean, absolutely brilliant. Like, look at the things he's done in his life. You can't become a top jiu-jitsu person as well as a TV personality and host the vast array of guests that he hosts on a 2.5 to 3.5 hour podcast and keep an audience of 19 million entertained if you're an idiot. So to me, he passed the IQ test. And he was just really, really excellent host who was quiet when I was talking and interrupted at the right moments and had really relevant things to say. So I really actually enjoyed it. I couldn't believe 2.5 hours went by so fast. And when we were done, he got up and he shook my hand and he said, "You really know what you're talking about." And that scares the shit out of them. And I was like, "Oh, thanks." And I said, "People had told me over the past year that I should go on your show." And my response was always, "He'll never have me on his show. I'm too radioactive." And he was like, "Well, we proved that wrong." And then I thought, well, I wonder if you'll actually air it. And then it aired within 24 hours before 24 hours was up. It was aired completely unedited. And so millions of people have seen that, and hundreds have been upset by it.
Who have been upset by it? Who've been the negative?
Imagine that. Well, there's this whole group of people who think that Joe Rogan is terribly irresponsible for providing an outlet for the minority opinions to be voiced on his show. And, me being a vaccine critic, threatening the public health of humanity, that it's very irresponsible of Joe to have someone like me on, let alone agree with me, which he currently does, I think, pretty much wholeheartedly. And they think that I'm irresponsible for using my medical, of course, yours is the same. We're doctors, and how can we be doing the things we're doing? And so, yeah, the trolls have descended in great number. It did take, that's why I named them the flying monkeys, because when the witch sends out the flying monkeys in the Wizard of Oz, it does take some time for them to get to their destination. And so the first criticism came out from some little dude. I'm not even going to give and mention a name because I don't want to give him any credibility. But he's kind of a young new minion who has the backing of the old guard. But nonetheless, like when I first see these things, I'm like, oh no, what did they get me on? And then I watch and I'm like, they didn't get me on anything. And in fact, they just proved that they actually have no idea what they're talking about and don't even have any idea of what I'm talking about. So the way they respond is so weird and backwards and easy to tackle. So I was kind of excited about tackling that one. And I put that out in my Flying Monkeys number one video. And I put out a
Very
Flying
good, by the way. Very, very good, by the way. The way that
I
you were
really enjoy
saying
it.
things and went back and forth between the science and slamming that guy, it was just absolutely pristine. It was very good.
Thank you. It takes a lot, and this is why, sane people don't do this. But I do. I take a lot of time to sit and watch their videos and read their critiques and, write down the timestamps and what their references are, and then I have to go read their references, and then I have to go, okay, is there any credibility to this or not? Once in a blue moon, there is some credibility to what they say, but I'd say 99% of the time, total rubbish, easy to tackle, easy to beat. And so that kind of emboldens me to keep on, going for it with them to a certain degree, because, we don't want to lose our life over it, in the sense of, our time, because it is incredibly time consuming. But at the same time, I actually learn a lot doing it, and it makes me a stronger warrior. So thank you, trolls. Thank you, flying monkeys, for helping me become stronger.
Well, it's so good to see you back on the playing field. I remember a while back after, when you said, "Hey, I'm just done. I'm burned out. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm still on the team, but I'm going to sit on the bench. I'm just going to watch because I've got other things in my life that I want to do, other things I'm interested in." And once you know what you can't unknow it. But there's something magnetic about once you get involved with this, you really it can't it's like bubble gum on your shoe. You just can't get away from it. And it eventually you get drawn back in. And I'm so glad to see because we so need you and need your voice and need your brilliance and everything that you've done over the years in this whole vaccine education realm. It's just really good to see you back swinging and slugging at people.
Well, I think sometimes we do need a rest. I thought it would be more of a permanent rest, and I was really enjoying my anonymity and my quiet life and getting back into, seeing real life patients rather than, battling on the battlefield of vaccination. But I think in that time, I had a lot of recovery and, got my sleep pattern set and became stronger and healthier. And so the timing was right with all that's going on now with, Kennedy in there. And so I think Del Bigtree's right when he says it's now or never. And then when I got invited to Rogan, I know people might not believe this, but there was literally not a cell in my body that wanted to go.
Oh, you
I didn't
told me that. We
want.
chatted about that. We did. You said, "Look, I don't really want to go." It's like, you
Yeah.
gotta go. You gotta go.
Nothing against him. It was just I knew what would happen, that it would be I'd be back, and I didn't want to be back. But I have three very close friends who, good advisors, both spiritual and with good sound logic, and they all three very quickly said, "You need to do this because your message needs to get out to a really big audience." And I was like, "Okay, but you three better be praying for me nonstop." And they did. And so it was really funny because during the podcast, when I left, I actually didn't remember 80% of what I said. And it took me a few weeks to get the courage to listen to it because I couldn't actually remember, because it wasn't just me in there. I feel that I was surrounded by angels, and this Holy Spirit was helping me answer so much because it went so fast and there were so many topics covered. And so, yeah, I mean, and I wouldn't do it without that, quite frankly, because I think it's really dangerous. So I'm back, and then after I was back, I thought, okay, so this big tidal wave just happened. Do I want to let it settle back into the ocean, or do I want to keep knocking things over? And I decided to keep knocking things over because why wouldn't I right now? And so
Now is
he
the time,
what was
right?
really cool is that I never expected this, but towards the end, he asked if I was on X. And I told him how I used to have a Twitter account and how it got, taken down. And I used to have 95,000 followers, and now I'm starting from scratch. And that's what they keep doing, isn't it, Sherry? They just take us down everywhere they can, every platform. And he goes, "Oh, well, what's your handle on X? We'll help you out." And I went from having, I think it was like 5 or 7,000 followers, and now I'm up to 190,000 followers. So, Joe Rogan just did a really sound thing for us in terms of broadening my audience and getting the message out to his audience, which was overwhelmingly supportive. Like he is, actually, if I was to take part of anybody's audience, his would be the one to do it because they're funny, they're versatile, they're used to hearing a lot of different, opinions from his guests. They're intelligent, and some of the comments said something like, "I think I just became an anti-vaccinator." And some people had never heard that there was any controversy at all. Now they're following me on X. So yeah, all in all, in retrospect, it was a really good experience, very worthwhile.
How can there be people that don't know that there's a controversy? I mean, what rock have you been living under for the last 150 years since the anti-vaccine movement started in 1853? What rock have you been living under?
Well, I think they're aware with COVID, and a lot of people are aware that there was a rat, with COVID, but they don't realize that that same rat, and that's the point of what Roman and I have been doing in our companion book and Dissolving Illusions, is like knock, knock. It's like I didn't lose any friends during COVID because I had already lost them back when I met you back in 2008, when I started to wake up. And, fortunately, my family stuck with me. And, but friends, there were a few, they weren't real friends actually. And now, man, the friends I have are just so amazing. It's just been such a great clean out. So yeah, I do think that there are people that didn't know the origins, but they're learning it now, aren't they?
They are. And I, that's one of the things I would say. I kind of called it on some of the broadcasts I've been on and on my own podcast when I call one of the gifts of COVID. One of the gifts of COVID is that people are, kind of going, the government screwed me. The government lied to me. I never in a million years thought that my government, I thought that maybe they would tell some gray truths, but I never knew that they would tell all right out lies and that they would do something that would harm me and people of this country and around the world. And I think that, because of the alternative media people that were broadcasting all the way through COVID. I mean, I did like 600 broadcasts in just a really short period of time. And then other people with lot even bigger, much bigger platforms than I have, were telling people don't do this. And now because of the death and injury numbers are continuing to climb. And the CDC even put out a paper, what, maybe a month ago that said that they thought that they have to be looking at these numbers for another 15 years in retrospect because of what's happened with the lipid nanoparticles and the spike protein and whatever else was is going on with that. So I think that one of the gifts of COVID is that people are kind of waking up. The other thing is people continue to have sex and have babies while they were all in locked in and shut down, and they lost their jobs or they couldn't find a pediatrician. The pediatricians wanted to see you out in the parking lot in your car, and so they didn't just this baby was born and they didn't go to the doctor, and now the baby's 2 years old. And is perfectly healthy, doesn't have asthma, allergies, eczema, ear infections, all this other stuff. And they're getting ready to have another baby. And they're like, well, this one didn't have any vaccines and they didn't die. Look at there, they're still alive. Maybe I don't need to have any vaccines at all. And so they're starting to really look and question at this, and I think so those are two of the several of what I call gifts of COVID, which kind of brings around to measles. The measles thing that happened here in Texas, which was just, nonsensical. I know you thought the same thing. And you have a lot in Dissolving Illusions about measles. Did you talk about measles on Rogan? And what else? What else would you say to people? I mean, I just tell them it's a fever, a cough, and a rash. Take some vitamin A and some vitamin C and ride the fever out, and you'll have a lifetime of immunity.
Yeah, well, funny enough, measles didn't come up at all in the Rogan podcast.
Really?
But when I was there, I did a couple of shows with Polly Tommy on CHD, and they were able to travel out to the West Texas area and get all the medical records from both cases, the both death cases. And Pierre Corey and I both had access to them, and we both went through them with a fine-tooth comb. And Pierre, being a pulmonologist and intensive care unit person, was a really good person to have on board because he looks at it slightly different to how I looked at it. But we see it the same. We don't disagree with each other. But where my focus was looking at the amount of drugs the children were given, the amount of fever reducers, like epic amounts of ibuprofen and Tylenol. The food that they were given, the digestive symptoms, and then later on the symptoms before death. And my conclusion was that the girl died of scurvy, plain and simple. And, I cite this medical article by GAN, GAN from Canada from I think 2008, where they looked at the vitamin C levels in people who were checking into a hospital. And they found that the majority of them had low vitamin C levels, but about a quarter of them had levels consistent with scurvy, e even using, in my opinion, levels that are far too low, given that you can get an adult man up to a level of 70 with two kiwi fruits per day. They consider 28 to be deficient and 11 to be scurvy. Well, it's much easier to get higher levels than 28. It's very easy. Well, if you know the symptoms of scurvy, which I do know, and you look at the track that happened and the fact that she was these girl this what the second girl had some like four admissions. The parents kept taking her in for help because they knew that she wasn't doing well. It wasn't the measles that was the problem. In fact, they didn't even think she had measles. The measles thing didn't really come up until like the second admission, and everyone was like, "Oh, I think she has measles." And they did some testing for her, and I've still not got the IgM level because that to me would be key. Having an early on IgM. The IgG level was negative, and supposedly the PCR test was positive. But if you want a complete database, you want to look at that IgM because we know PCRs, A, they can be get contaminated, and B, we know that they can run, multiple cycles on it and make anything become positive. So I've still not got that IgM, and I think that they are obscuring that IgM because so much time has gone by and none of us have seen it. And it clearly stated in the record that the IgM was ordered and that it was pending on the day of discharge. But when you think about
And
checking in with a
just
low
for,
vitamin C.
let me just interrupt you just for a second there, just for the audience. An IgM level is an antibody level that goes up in early infection. It's the first thing that goes up that you see the IgM level go up. And it's specific to that, to what they're running it for. And if not being able to see that, and the IgG level, which is long term, was negligible or absent. Did she even have the infection? I think is the point, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
yes,
Okay.
absolutely.
So keep
Did she
going.
have measles at all? I think she had, hospital neglect and hospital medical abuse that led her to scurvy. They did finally give her vitamin A, like really late in the course. I don't think a vitamin D, they don't check vitamin D levels, let's face it, but they should have checked a vitamin D level as an outpatient because she presented to an emergency department, but we don't have a sane and rational, helpful medical system. In the nutrition section, the admission that she went in for to have, she was still having a cough and she was struggling to breathe. And her chief complaint was, and she's an 8-year-old, but she had abdominal pain, nausea, and vomiting. And so they give her Zofran to help with her nausea. And then they bring her in McDonald's food. So what she had while she was in the hospital was Sprite, Gatorade, chicken McNuggets, and French fries. So again, those are foods that are going to make your vitamin C requirement higher. All the while her vitamin C is being chewed up by stress, by being put on BiPAP, by her parents being told they can't be with her, by antibiotic after antibiotic, steroid, fever reducers, glutathione depletion, so she had nothing to help recycle the little bit of vitamin C she might have had. And she ultimately died with congestive heart failure, even though she had a normal echocardiogram and pulmonary edema. And if you look up the symptoms of scurvy, that's exactly what happens. You get a cardiomyopathy towards the end when it's really severe. So, in my opinion, if they'd have just given her an intravenous or even a big oral dose round the clock of vitamin C from the beginning, that she wouldn't have kept repeatedly going back into hospitals. But, the system being what it is a very dangerous place. And I say that with some caution because sometimes we do need a medical system. But what I find is that when I ever need a medical system, I have to fight for what I want. And I'm a doctor. And oftentimes, okay, I'm going to tell you a story that I don't think I've spoken about publicly. But when COVID was first going around and the vaccine came out, I was giving an ozone treatment to a lady. You take the blood out and you give it back, you ozonate it and give it back. And so I'm giving it back, and I used, we used a citrate anticoagulant, and all of a sudden, like the blood just won't move through the tube. And I'm like, and so I'm putting saline, I'm trying to give it, a little bit of extra pressure, and I'm going, what's going on here? And then all of a sudden, the penny dropped, and I go, have you been vaccinated for COVID? And she very proudly said, oh, yes, I've had two vaccines. And I was like, okay. I'm not going to be judgmental. The woman has horrible arthritis and she got convinced by her doctors that she needed it. And then I disconnected her system and, a little bit of vapor can escape off of the blood, whatever, or maybe out of her. I don't know. We don't understand how this works. And I put it in the trash bin and the trash bin would have been open and enclosing through the rest of the day. About 5 days later, I'm like having trouble walking. And I go, wait a minute. This isn't good. Like I'm healthy. Like I don't have arthritis. I don't have any problems. And then a day later, like I couldn't bear weight on my left hip. And so I went into the local emergency, and the guy was great. He measured both of my thighs and he was like, you've got a DVT, you need to go into the hospital. And I was like, oh, good Lord, I don't want to go into a hospital. And so I went up to the hospital and I stayed for 2 nights in this horrible emergency. I don't have to tell you about emergency rooms with a ding, ding, dingy, ding. But at least I had my own little curtained off area, my own bathroom. And all I really wanted was some pain control and a diagnosis. All I wanted was an ultrasound. Like I should have just paid the $300 to get myself an ultrasound in retrospect. I spent 2 days in there. Not only did they not do an ultrasound, they did two x-rays on my pelvis because the technicians who were in training messed up the first one, which showed nothing. I was abused and examined by a medical team who initially didn't know who I was, but somebody must have Googled me. And then they just got just so nasty with me. And they started asking all these irrelevant questions. I was like, wait a minute, what does any of this have to do with my leg? And after a little while, this by the second day, I was like, you know what? I need to be discharged. I'm going home now. What I really want from you is something for pain because the ibuprofen has done nothing. The Tylenol has done nothing. I need an opiate, just a few doses of opiate to get me through until I can get home and work this out. So they gave me tramadol, which was better than a kick in the butt. And I went home and I took it and I was able to sleep and relax. And what I did, I don't know, Sherry, but there is something about cabbage. All I wanted to eat was raw cabbage for like 4 days. Pretty much all I ate was raw cabbage. And I gave myself intravenous vitamin C twice a day. And within 4 days, I was right as rain. I had no problem and I haven't had a problem ever since. But that just it illustrated to me, what a septic medical system we have and how difficult it is to navigate and get what you want. And I've seen person after, I don't have to tell you about the cardiomyopathies and the real problems people had trying to get help. So, yeah, medical system broken.
And I, that's, we're going to take a little quick break here. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about my book, which is Zero Accountability in a Failed System. It's worse than broken. It's completely failed us and come back. So we're going to take a really quick break here. Today, we're talking just Dr. Suzanne Humphries, who really needs no introduction, but we're going to take a quick break. There's much more to come. We'll be right back.
We also have an apparel line on our store that has just the best things. In fact, I go and shop at my own store. I mean, I really do go and buy stuff out of my own store. They have t-shirts and sweatshirts and cups and mugs and totes. We've got a great designer. We're always adding new things all the time. And either one of those two product lines, either our private label supplements, our Opti line, the white bottles with the green leaves on it, or with the apparel store, and they're two separate stores. They do not have a single shopping cart. It's like you go in one store and get your groceries and you go to the other store and get your shoes. Well, these are two separate stores, but you can use the same affiliate code. If you use the code podcast, when you go to the checkout, you can get 10% off on everything you buy every time you go to the store.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Suzanne, I was so grateful when you said, I kind of badgered you. Kind of badgered you a little bit. Said, come on, you can write the foreword, you can do it. Then she wrote it, True Confessions here, she wrote it. And then 6 months later, I had really super expanded the book. And so what she had kind of written about really didn't quite apply to the new expanded version of the book. And she said, I don't have time to reread that book. I said, well, just read chapters 12, 13, and 14, because that's really the new stuff. And I don't know how much of it you went back and reread, but your foreword is just really amazing. And one of the things you had said was that, I thought this was stuff that I knew. So for my audience that's been following me and you and other people for a really long time, they, may say, well, I already know a lot of that stuff. How did you feel to think about it when you kind of read through all the things that I'd written?
Oh, Sherry, I probably shouldn't admit this, but I really wanted to jump off a cliff when I was done reading it. And I thought, oh my gosh, Sherry's going to depress everybody. But in the end, you come through. You come through with, here's where we're going to go with this. This is what we need to do. When the truth is, knowledge is power, and we have to know what we're up. Like, I didn't know so much of what was in there. And the reason I don't write forewords for people in general is because I do sit and read the entire book. And I did read it again when you sent it back to me because I thought something could have changed. And so it took me, it takes me weeks. Like I was up every night, like reading that book. It was like my bedtime story. What? And so I did rewrite the introduction, but there was so much that I didn't know. Like, I didn't know there was a separate filing system for COVID that wasn't, you know, and I didn't know there was a statute of limitations that most people, but by the time they find out that there is a place where they can file a claim, their statute of limitations is up. I mean, it's just so awful. And all the stuff that happens in the dark of night, like, we knew that happened with the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Plan. Like, all kinds of weird stuff that I'm talking about now happened because there's so much denialism about what happened in the past with how, you know, the politicians passed a law and then slowly eroded the law away overnight with little bills that went past in the night that nobody was told about. And you just basically tell that story about what how it happened recently, how history's repeating itself. But it's even more nightmarish now than it was in the past, far more nightmarish now, because people swallowed the lies in the past, and we have to stop swallowing the lies. And I think, you know, to read your book, getting through it is really important, because there's just so much vital information about, and look, I don't know anybody else who would sit and read all these documents that Sherry has read and be able to, you know, feed it back to us in a way that we can comprehend with full references on everything. But the PrEP Act and all that kind of, you know, craziness and how that came about and the historical background behind that, so very valuable. Like, this is a textbook. It should be required for law students, as far as I'm concerned. But you did make it readable for the rest of us. And so I afterwards was happy to write the foreword and glad that I could. Yeah.
Well, I'm really, really grateful, because, and there is a lot, you know, there is a lot in here. It started with I was going to you know, my staff wanted me to re-release the book Foul, which you really liked, and you really, really liked that book. And that was when and I wrote that book in 2005. It's Foul, F-O-W-L, Foul, Bird Flu, you know, it's not what you think. And most of it is kind of in more of an environmental book than anything. And when bird flu kind of raised its ugly head last summer of 24, you know, that's when my staff was saying, oh, well, just put a different name on it and re-release it. Well, you can't really do that. I mean, the book was written in 2005. So it had a lot of 2005 politics and things that were going on at that time in Bush too. And so much has happened and changed since then. But I kind of wove in that historical backdrop of what happened in 2005 that became the template for what we were subjected to during COVID. And then the whole of how they weaponized the healthcare system. You know, one thing, Suzanne, that, you know, we don't really talk about in the health freedom movement is the whole, you know, march, the 40-year march to 2030, which is the name of one of the chapters in the book, of the Healthy People program that started in 1980. And, you know, without computers and without anything, but how it's expanded and incorporated into our life, and how the healthcare system got so weaponized, starting with Medicare and electronic medical records. And people don't realize what a disaster those two things are. And so I dug through a lot of stuff in through the congressional record. And you know, I found a place in the congressional record that talks about as far back as in 1995. Now, remember, Medicare started in 1963, 64, 65, around that time frame. In 1995, they were already talking about Medicare going bankrupt because of, you know, there was one story, and you will relate to this because it was about people on dialysis. And that when they had originally written the original Medicare Act, they thought they would have, I'm going to make up some numbers, but just to tell you, they would have maybe 50,000 people a year on dialysis. Well, by 1995, there were like 3 million people on dialysis or some big number. And that was just that one thing, how much it was eating up the money. And now we've got, you know, centenarians in the U.S. We've got people over the age of 100, which is the fastest growing demographic in the U.S. So we've got people that are obligated, they're forced to sign up for Medicare at age 65, even if they're gainfully employed and their employer provides health and benefits insurance and all these things. At 65, you have to sign up for Medicare, or you will not be entitled to your Social Security that you've paid into and worked for all that time. Those two things need to be uncoupled. But at from 65, you know, people are now, I mean, average life expectancy is somewhere between 78 and 81. And people are living into their 90s. I mean, I was listening to, you know, some of those, like when they were confirming Robert Kennedy, and, you know, I'm looking at Grassley sitting up there, Senator Grassley sitting up on this panel. I'm like, how old is that guy? Well, I looked it up. He's 93. And he's still gainfully employed as a senator, you know? And so this whole disaster with the Healthy People Program, the international vaccination program with Gavi and all the things that have happened, all the sinister stuff behind that, which is more than just Bill Gates, and all the stuff that has to do with Medicare and the weaponization of the healthcare system, it's all in this book. So you guys, it's sort of like Suzanne's book is this compendium that you have to have. And so it's not only is it readable, I think it's readable because it's my normal style of how I write, but it's really something that you'll refer back to repeatedly, I think.
Absolutely. And it's a history book in its own right. But in addition, you break down vaccine components and you still talk about the bird flu. And, my favorite story of that, the first boy that was diagnosed and how they had to send his specimen off somewhere else. And something like 2 months later, they do a PCR test and find the bird flu in him. There's a whole big story. There's always a bigger story, isn't there? And you actually brought me back to the days because I was still employed as a nephrologist when the electronic medical record thing came on. And I remember thinking, there's no way I want anything to do with this. Like, I like good old handwritten notes. Even if doctor's writing is hard to understand, I still like the handwritten charts. These EMRs, I remember the outpatient doctors would have them. And I would just get a pile of papers with repeat stuff. I mean, the amount of paper, where are these environmentalists? The amount of paper that is wasted with these EMRs when you print them out. I guess we're not supposed to print them out. And I was just so glad that I got out right when that was all happening. And yeah, the capture of the dialysis units was so we used to have these freestanding dialysis units that were like, it was like the bar Cheers, where everyone would know each other and everyone knew your name. And, we really got to love these people. And then the corporations came in and took them over. And they started controlling what I could do and how much we could spend on each person. And it all just kind of, you actually made my career make more sense in reading your book because I was able to understand why the things that I didn't like that I saw happening were happening.
Yeah, and speaking of nephrology, I mean, that was kind of your pivotal point, right? That you saw people when they would get a flu shot or a pneumonia shot, these people with, chronic renal failure, but very stable, would crash and burn, have to go in the hospital and get dialysis, clean out their blood, and then they'd get back to their baseline minus a little bit. And you saw this pattern, and that was kind of really where you really started putting the pieces together. Isn't that right? Am I
That's
remembering?
absolutely right. That was kind of the crack in the windshield. But as the crack spread, what I started to see was, and like you mentioned, how the dialysis population exploded. Well, why would that be? Are we going to try to say that that's genetic? No, it's the same as autism. It was caused by the medical system. I don't call it a healthcare system. It is not a healthcare system. It is a medical system. And I started learning more holistic things and how the body really functions and what the DNA blueprint really is for our bodies and started seeing how I, as an internist and other internists, were actually the cause of so much chronic kidney disease. If you just want to look at the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory agents used for arthritis, instead of like helping people detoxify and eat right and get this depositions out of their joints, instead it's like, no, we'll just dampen that inflammation down for you. Well, that's not really a very good idea. And so there was so much of nephrology that I saw as that patient dialysis population exploding wasn't just due to people living longer like they try to tell us. It was due to the drugs that are given to people to deal with their symptoms rather than actually dealing with their diseases. And so, again, reading your book, I was like, oh, yeah. Now, everything's just kind of falling into place. The pennies are dropping. So between you and Catherine Austin Fitz, I think I have a better understanding now of like why things happened in front of my eyes the way they did. Because she always talks about the financial stuff, and how we're basically enslaved financially and how profitable that is. And then you kind of fill in the gaps in terms of how that all occurred through all the legal proceedings as well as the medical stuff. And all it's really interesting. Like I can't say enough about this book. I think absolutely everybody should read it and get through the whole thing. I did
Well, thank you.
twice.
There were sections in the book that honestly I could have written probably 10 or 20 more pages on that topic. But then I thought, somewhere you got to draw the line because I don't want to have a 1200 page book that nobody will ever read. And so there might be some sections that I may go back and either write a smaller book or a little bit of an ebook to expand upon some of the topics. Like the Medicare stuff is just awful. And, you know, what happened with that and all the governments. And, you know, when you hear them all the time, they're saying, we're never going to touch Medicare. Medicare is going to be just fine. And it's just like just a big fat lie. And it was a big fat lie from the beginning. So it's like really crazy. Have you had the opportunity or had the occasion to speak with John Bowdoin yet?
John, no.
I just did a podcast with him the other day. John is an engineer by training, but he's really smart. And he saw all this stuff that was happening and started COVID. So he enrolled in law school because he thought, well, I got to figure this out from a legal perspective. And the law school that he was enrolled in would not accept his medical exemption to not get a COVID shot. And it wasn't that they approved it or denied it. They just ignored it and unenrolled him from law school. Just said, you're not here anymore. And so, you know, he just continued to study on his own. And then he started seeing all these deaths that just didn't make sense. You know, he would try to find things in the VIRS thing. So he's from Massachusetts, and he called the health department and wanted to know what he needed to do to file a FOIA request to get some death records. And they go, well, you don't need to do anything. We'll just send them to you. And they dumped 450,000 death certificates in his lap that have names and addresses and diagnoses codes and all that stuff. So being the wizard engineer that he is, he's a wizard on Excel, and he just wrote all of the formulas and plugged in all these numbers. And the stuff, and now that database has gone from 450,000 because he has Wisconsin, Massachusetts, and a little bit of Southern Vermont in his database. There's more than 1.2 million death records that he has crunched the data and the CPT codes and the ICD-10 codes and all the stuff from COVID. And he said, you know, everybody's focus has been on myocarditis. He said the biggest thing that nobody's talking about is the renal failure, the death from renal failure that's been caused by these COVID. And he's got all of the numbers. And so he would be a very interesting person for you to talk to. I'll make sure that you get, and he's a great guy. He's really a nice guy. And just a real, you know, engineers sometimes are just kind of numbers eggheads. That's why they decide to go into engineering, and they can crunch all the numbers six ways from Sunday. Well, what he's found is more death and destruction that we're not even talking about from renal failure and from these, from the COVID shots. Really interesting.
Yeah, well, it is, and it's a fact. I mean, even I think somebody, I don't know if he was involved in this, but there was a paper published. I think McCullough was involved in this, where they looked at the VAERS database, which we know is, you know, a little bit wonky, but it's got some, you know, if you can find something in it, it's going to be real. And they found the signal for kidney failure really, really high with the COVID shots. But, you know, the pro-vaccine, what they say, because I mentioned that on the Rogan podcast, and I was met with, oh, well, no. And it was the same thing I was met with back in the day when I first met you, is that, no, it's the COVID will cause kidney failure and will cause it way worse than a vaccine would. Yeah, a vaccine might do it once in a while, but it's COVID that does it. It's like, no, dude, it's inflammation that does it. Kidneys are super sensitive to inflammation. You know, if you have a kidney transplant, you have to take a lot more immune suppressive drugs than if you have a heart transplant. Would you ever think that? Well, the reason is because kidneys are just loaded with immunologic defenses. And, you know, you have to suppress that if you want to give a transplant so it doesn't get rejected. Well, those immunologic defenses are going to react to a vaccine. Yeah, and yeah, to some degree, they'll react to a virus as well. But it's usually, if you have kidney failure during a virus, it's usually a combination of taking fever reducers and ibuprofen for pain, which are also bad for kidneys. So yeah, I'm aware of the signal for kidney disease, you know, at least acute kidney injury from the vaccine. But that sounds like another layer that needs to be combined with what they found in VAERS, because these are actually death reports, which I assume somebody said something honest about them, or they found out if they were vaccinated or not. Probably. He probably has that information.
He does. And he cross-referenced a lot of those death certificates he has with reports in the VAERS database and was able to match a lot of those up, which is another big portion of the book that I talk about you alluded to, is the CICP. The Countermeasure Injury Compensation Program, which, like you, Suzanne, when I was doing the research for the book and I kind of stumbled across that, I thought, how did I miss this? I mean, my nose is in vaccine stuff. You know, the only time I'm not looking at it, reading at it, talking about it is when I'm asleep because I don't see patients anymore. So I'm writing and podcasting and doing consulting and things like that on vaccine injuries. How did I miss this? And it's a massive database thing that is just so messed up. And it doesn't have an injury compensation table. It's not funded by the US government. The statute of limitations is 1 year. And as of like maybe a few weeks ago, I looked at it again. They have only adjudicated 40 cases. And there's 1.6 million people who filed VAERS reports that are they're going to get nothing. For a couple reasons. First of all, is they filed it with the wrong system. I talk about that in the book that, you know, if you wanted to buy a plane ticket, you could not buy it at the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. You couldn't go to, you know, to the DMV to buy a plane ticket, even though they both have to do with transportation. They just don't do that. Well, the VAERS system doesn't have the COVID jab on its injury table. So you went to the DMV, or I mean, you went to the VAERS database, and 1.6 million people filed reports over there, and we know that's less than 10% of capture rate. So, but 1.6 million people who should have filed with the injury the countermeasure injury compensation program, which is CICP. So that's a mouthful, CICP for short. I didn't even know it existed, and they've only and they it was there for smallpox back in 2001. It was there for swine flu in 2009. And that's where most of the adjudication has occurred, which is still very small. For COVID, as of just a couple, 3 weeks ago, I just checked it again. They've only adjudicated rewards for 40 people. Now, the rewards are like 2 point something million dollars that they've paid out, $2.3 million dollars they paid out. But if you take those 40 people and how much they've been paid, and there's a whole table there of how much each person has been paid, and you throw out the two highest numbers, the one person that got 2 point something million dollars and another person that for myocarditis got $370,000. If you take those two out and average the other 38, the average payout was $4,000.
Whoopee, right?
Yeah, so these people who are chronically sick, chronically disabled, dead—they've adjudicated no deaths, no deaths. I mean, any of that stuff. It is the most corrupt, horrible thing. It's one of the things that drove me to write this book was because I was so mad, like that this. And I thought, you know what? If I don't know about it, Suzanne doesn't know about it, and we're kind of like vaccine queens, the John Q. public knows nothing about it. It
Absolutely.
was horrible, horrible.
Yeah.
And that
Yeah.
there's a chapter in the book about that. It's called "Sacrificed for the Greater Good" is the title of that chapter. So you'll be able to the people that get the book. It's a zero accountability in a failed system. I love this cover. I just love it. My staff put this cover together, and I just love it because it's kind of sinister looking, kind of like the book is. And the zero accountability in a failed system. You can get it from Amazon. And you know, soon you'll be able to get it from our website. But if you get it from Amazon, when you get it, please read it. And if you like it, please go write a good review because that really helps us to sell more books. Writing a one review because you're a vaccine troll doesn't is it's not a good thing. So
They'll do that, don't worry. But you know what? With us, they just got drowned in the ocean of 5-star reviews, so don't worry about it.
well, good. Well, I think the people that have started reading it and have gotten back to me, they're like, this is that I was on a podcast earlier today, and the gal said, I just got the book on Tuesday. I'm only at about 100 pages in. She said, but what I did was I yellow highlighted the table of contents because then for quick reference, I can go back and know what I'm going to be looking at for quick reference.
Right.
So I think you'll like it. So I hope that people will get it. So, what is on your schedule now? So, what are you, since now you've done Rogan, you've had a big push on your book and a big push on X. What is Dr. Humphreys doing now?
Well, I actually decided to just take a couple of months to relax in the sense of not seeing patients. I still see some, and I still do other stuff. Like I read thermograms, you know, that's part of what I do is like the radiologist for the thermograms. But aside from that, I'm basically going through and I don't have to do this, mind you, but I'm defending dissolving illusions and I'm defending what I said on the Rogan podcast. And like I said on there, if I'm wrong about something, I will admit it. And if I'm not wrong, get out of my way. Because I'll show you why I'm not wrong, and I'll show you and the world more things that they didn't know before, thanks to your question. So I started the Flying Monkey series, and I think we were talking about this before we got on, like the Wizard of Oz, you know, the witch. Some people are so young, they're like, what are flying monkeys? I have to remember that there's some young people, but that's good that they're out there and they're watching. But the flying monkeys were when Dorothy and the animals, the scarecrow, were going through, I don't know, the yellow brick road and out into wherever they were going to get the things that they wanted. The wicked witch wanted the ruby slippers back. And there's one scene where she's talking to the flying monkeys and they're like, they're ready to go on the attack. And they're monkeys that fly and they're really sinister looking. They wear red and black. And then she sends them all out in droves and they start flying out and then they land. And I remember as a kid, like that was the most terrifying part is when the flying monkeys landed, you know, the poor cowardly lion. And so, that's what they seem like to me. And the time frame is that everything seemed okay in the beginning. There was like just thousands, like 62,000, like, thank you for having Suzanne Humphries on. This was such a great interview. And then along came, you know, the flying monkeys who had just enough time to watch the Rogan podcast, you know, call their buddies like Paul Offit, et cetera, and get some information. And they put it together to try to, you know, dismiss what I said and put down Rogan and myself. And at first I was like, oh, what do these people have? And then I watched and I was like, oh, spare me. You know, like the best one of them just got destroyed by Flying Monkeys Part One. And then there was another one in 2018 who was one, you know, our friend Dorit Reese and, you know, the science-based medicine and Gorski and all those hags. So they have this website, and some guy named Joel Harrison attacked Dissolving Illusions, you know, pretty viciously in 2018 with like a 70-page diatribe with so much nonsense. Like, I think these people think that if they have a lot of letters after their name and they write something really long, that people will go, oh, well, that must be right. And Humphries must be wrong. And so I sat there, like the first time someone pointed out an article that I referenced by Brown about the 1958 Michigan polio epidemic after the vaccine had been out for a long time. And I referenced that and he just ripped into me for that reference. And I thought, oh, what did I get wrong? And then I read the paper again for like the fourth time. And then I thought, no, absolutely not. What he's saying is, as an epidemiologist and someone with an MPH, he should know better than to have used that paper to try to make the point that he made rather than the point that the authors were making. And so I sat on that for a few years, and just recently that I'm having some downtime, you know, to do my taxes and kind of catch up on emails and all that kind of stuff. I decided, okay, I'm going to take this dude on. And so just before we finished, I recorded the rebuttal to his, and he promised that he would give us part 2, 3, and 4. Now, he's an older gentleman. He's very pro-vaccine. He was with the Clinton Every Child by 2. And, you know, he's always been all about telling everybody how to be a good dog. So I had to wonder, we never saw part 2. We never saw part 3. We never saw part 4. Where's poor Joel? Is he up to his 7th vaccine? Is he unable to type? Is he still alive? I don't know. But maybe he's not even around anymore because he never followed up on his promise. So I just did another Flying Monkeys Part 3 was for Joel, and there'll be another one coming soon. And I'm just going to keep doing it because I actually enjoy it.
Well, you are the perfect person because you're brilliant. You're super articulate. You reference and research everything. It's really, really good. What do you think about what's happening with HHS, with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. being secretary and Jay Bhattacharya and Makari and Dr. Oz and all and this whole crew? Do you think that we have a chance to move the needle?
Well, I think they've already moved the needle. You know, they've definitely moved the needle. But I think what we have is a HHS secretary that for the first time in history is talking about health. Like real health, like the kind of health you and I talk about. And I watch when he's interviewed, and these interviewers just try to stomp all over him. And he's punching back. He's saying things that no HHS secretary has ever said. So while, I would like it a lot more if he just stepped right in and slashed the COVID jabs for at least the 6-month-olds. I'm giving him some time because my understanding from people that are more close to what's going on is that he's doing his best and he's still up against a lot of opposition. And President Trump, sorry, but he's not totally on our side. Like, I think years ago he made the comment about autism, and I think he understands that. But even for a president to come in and say, okay, we're from here on in, every institution in the United States is going to only have optional vaccines. Like, that's a big leap going from mandates to, losing our opting out to go, switching it, flipping it totally on its head. And I think it probably does have to be a bit more of a process where the public does have to see, the unveiling of all the crimes and the lies and talking about where real health comes from. And so I think there's a certain line towing that has to be done with politicians, and why that's why they all seem a little bit two-faced to us. But I will not judge until I see the fruit that's born. And look, he hasn't been in there for very long, and I'm willing to give him some more time and watch and see what happens. But if it turns out to just be, the Means twins talking about, food dyes and Fruit Loops, then I'm out of here. But if it becomes something more in depth, and we're really going to bring vaccines to the table, we're going to let the anti-vaxxers like you and I, who are unapologetic anti-vaxxers, if they're going to let us even into the room, then that's historical. And
Yeah,
I do believe that could
I've
happen.
said that, I think that some of the stuff that's happening with food is very important and it needs to happen. We need to get the colors, the dyes, the high fructose corn syrup, the stuff, the fluoride out of the water. All of that stuff is really good, but it's secondary to the pharmaceutical stuff. But I would say that going for the food stuff first, even though there's big ag and big food and equally, a set of Goliaths sitting around the table, it is a little bit more of a low-hanging fruit, and it is a way to gather some wind and gather some winds, that if we can see that, if those things are moving forward and they start seeing changes in that area, that's a good thing. I think that, then we start opening up the general public to seeing something about health, because now they don't have any idea about health. I went to the grocery store the other day and I came home and I wrote this little rant because I was just, I went to the store and so just for my own edification, I just walked down the aisle and I was just picking up things off the shelf and just reading the label on the back. And I came home and I said, you can't eat anything, nothing. Even the things that are organic are suspect, and whatever the soil is from the stuff that's falling out of the air that's in the soil. And they have 50 vaccines now for fish. So there's, a fish, the fish issue. All of the, I just did a podcast the other day with a gal that was talking about the slaughter of cattle and pigs and sheep and things and animals for our food, and you can't eat that stuff. You can't eat anything out of a can, a box, a bag, anything like that, because it's soybean oil and high fructose corn syrup and red dye, whatever, blue dye, yellow dye, green dye. It's like you can't eat anything. And then you look around the grocery store, and most every single person I saw, and this is not being judgmental, it's just an observation, everybody is a minimum of 50 to 70 pounds overweight. Because they have all of this junk that's clogging up their systems and their detoxification organs, and they can't do any better. Even though they may be trying to eat more healthy, there's no healthy food to eat. And so all the stuff that Secretary Kennedy is doing with food, I think, is really important. This whole, the whole autism thing that he's tossed out there, because now all the neuroatypical people are on a rampage. And that he just, I saw yesterday, he was at some event and was talking. It was an addiction event. I don't know if you saw that video, but he was at an event talking about addiction and how, we need to do things to help people that are addicted. And his speech was really more about his process of when he had such terrible addiction process with drugs and alcohol and all that stuff, and how he got out of it. And he was interrupted 5, 7 times with hecklers and all these other things that were going on. And I thought, and one of those people held a sign that said, cuts kill, because they're losing all their jobs. And I thought, Americans are just a bunch of babies. They're just a bunch of crybabies. They never suffer any, and they never have anything that's uncomfortable. They never lost a job in their life. They've always been spoon-fed everything. They don't know anything about respect. Whether you agree with that person or not, you can don't have to be there and heckle them and disrespect them and make a jerk out of yourself, you know, and so I really, and you know, Trump hasn't been in the office yet because I read a couple of articles this morning about it's coming up on his first 100 days. So that means that Bobby's been there about 60 days. And so the stuff that he's actually been able to do and the people that he's putting together, when every step that he tries to take is literally a landmine, and he's got 500 guns pointed to his head from Cassidy and Pocahontas and all these terrible senators that are just awful. And so, you know, I'm willing to I really want to support him and give him some grace because I, you know, you and I both know Bobby. We've known him for years at conferences we've spoken at and things like that. He's really super smart. And he's super smart. I've said this several times that if he's not completely, doesn't have a complete photographic memory, he's pretty darn close. The way that he can remember studies and names and numbers and all the things that he rattles off. And I think that he has a plan, and we just have to give him grace, pray for him, give him some support and hope, you know, plan for the worst and hope for the best that eventually he is going to get the, you know, because right after he got nominated, he wasn't even approved yet. I said, you know, Bobby, we could have the most pristine food in the world. We could be living in the Garden of Eden as far as our food goes. And it isn't going to matter a squat if you don't tackle that pediatric vaccination schedule, when kids get 30 vaccines by the time they're 1 year of age and they're old enough to sit in their high chair and eat their first high fructose corn syrup laden meal, they've already been toast. It doesn't really matter. You know, and so
absolutely. Yeah. Couldn't agree more. And it's, you know, like, obviously I'm in favor of wholesome food. It's not that I'm against that. I just recently looked up the difference in mayonnaise. Just look Hellman's mayonnaise from back in the 1980s versus the ingredients today. Like, it used to have 4 ingredients and now it's got like 13 ingredients. Like, I make my own mayonnaise out of my own chicken eggs, egg yolks. You know, the only thing I can't make is my own olive oil, but I make my own olive oil mayonnaise. So I feel so much better these days not eating grocery food and not eating restaurant food. It's like I feel younger. My joints don't ache anymore. My brain's functioning better. So there's no doubt about it that food is a super important thing. But yeah, if I was getting jabbed to the hilt, then none of that would matter at all. And you know, you brought up the fish thing. And I remember years ago, I think I sent you this paper where, like, people think we're joking that they're vaccinating fish. Like, how can you vaccinate fish? Well, have you ever seen the size of a salmon? Well, they literally can pick up the salmon and give the salmon an injection. And the paper that I read was about the tumors that were occurring in the vaccinated salmon. So, like, knock, knock.
You know, last year,
a big industry.
It was in December of last year. I have a friend that has a condo on the beach in Florida, and she gifted me around Christmas time when, you know, tourist season is low. She gifted me 2 weeks at this condo, and I was still recovering from the stroke. I was, you know, the stroke was in August. This was in December, you know, and I, you know, of the previous year. No. This was December of 23 when I was down there. The stroke was in August. This was December of 23. And so I was going to write a Substack on bioengineered foods because somebody was at my house and they'd brought in some stuff and, you know, was sitting on the kitchen counter, and I picked up the package and I read it, and it says contains bioengineered ingredients. And I thought, what the heck is that? Well, as it turns out, bioengineered is very different than GMO. And so I started going down that rabbit hole and looking at how the GMO stuff got started and how bioengineered is different than GMO. And then I ended up on the USDA site and the 13 different plants and animals that are genetically modified. And I'm going down the list. And what turned out to be a 2,000 word Substack has turned into a 40 page paper, and I'm still not done with it. Well, as I'm reading that, and I'm getting to the point where they're talking about salmon, genetically engineered salmon, and I thought, what the heck is that? So I go down that little rabbit hole and I find an entire textbook about vaccinating fish and that there are at least 50 different vaccines for fish. I was mortified. I said, I can't believe this. They're even vaccinating our poor little fish. They're just swimming around trying to be fish.
Well, these are the farmed,
there was
the farmed
one,
ones.
There was one study that they did of, I think it was a set of 10 fish. There's like four different ways that they can vaccinate them. They can feed it to them. They can subcutaneously inject them. They can intraperitoneal inject them. And I think there's one other way. And they took these 12 fish and they intraperitoneally injected these fish. And then they followed them in this tank. And they just laid down in the bottom and they were sick and they were in pain. And the other fish were kind of trying to comfort them. I thought, I'm never going to eat a fish again. It was just horrible to see what was happening. And when they actually then sacrificed the fish, their entire intestinal tract was all matted together, like because they'd been injected with all these chemicals. It was just awful. It's just awful what we've done to God's creatures, you know, the plants, the animals, the birds in the air, the food that we have. And now there's this new thing. They just got approval that they're going to start the experimentation to blocking out the sun. This whole organization that's coming out of Israel, they've got this new ingredient that nobody knows what it is. They're not releasing it because it's proprietary, but they've got the go ahead to start experimenting to completely block out the sun from the earth because of global warming.
Well, I wonder where they think these people think they're going to live. You know, do they have seriously underground cities that are all stocked and prepped for everything?
I guess that's kind of what's it. So we're running out of time here, Suzanne. I could sit and talk to you forever and ever and ever and ever, as you know. And, you know, we never get enough time to talk together. But what would you like to leave our audience with today as we're closing out on our show here today?
I would like to leave the audience with that we're in a very unique time, a very critical time in terms of trying to get back to our health, trying to build health, and having a government that may possibly work with us. So look, I'm practicing what I'm preaching. I wanted to just kind of go and live a nice, comfortable life, which I could have done. I could be making lots of money. I could be having a really nice house and doing work that I really like to do. But instead, I've gone back onto the battlefield. And it doesn't mean you have to go hurt anybody. When I talk about a battlefield, it's, you know, think of it more like a chessboard, I suppose. Or if you like checkers. But, you know, it is a game. It's a bit of a game. And part of that game is in being intelligent and learning and having knowledge at your fingertips, not going, oh, Tenpenny said something. No, you have to kind of know what Tenpenny said. You have to know about the CICP and the difference between that and the VAERS. And because sometimes if you just learn like two or three little things, but you learn them really well, you know, if like, for instance, I love to talk about polio because I feel like polio is one of those arguments that you can't lose on if you understand the history. And I feel like aluminum is another one of those arguments that you cannot lose on the aluminum argument if you know everything about. And there's not a lot to know, quite frankly. Like I just did one video. It's called Trojan Horses and Cluster Bombs. Just learn that. Learn what Dr. Tenpenny has to say in her new book. Learn some of the facts from there and just use them and use them to the best. It's like, look, if you're a warrior, you might be good, you know, with a sword, you might be good with a slingshot, you might be good with a rifle, but very few are good with everything. Just get good at something and use it and don't be afraid and be diplomatic. You don't have to, like sometimes you meet someone that's an anti-vaxxer and they do it to me. They just talk at me so fast that my eyes glaze over and I pretty much know everything they're saying anyway. Use your words judiciously and use them on the people that need to hear it. Don't be bringing your message to people that already know and knocking them over with it. Just bring part of your message to people who have never heard any of it or who know very little and in a gentle way. And I find that asking questions is often a better way of getting, you know, someone to think than is throwing everything you know at them. And in fact, when I was just waking up to vaccines back when I first met you, one of the cardinal moments I remember is somebody, when I told them that they shouldn't allow their child to play with the hammer and nails because they weren't vaccinated, even though I knew this kid was healthier and stronger than anybody else, I thought she's at risk. And her mother said to me, well, what do you know about tetanus? And in my head, I thought, I don't know jack shit about tetanus. But outside, I said, well, I know you don't want to get it. And I know you can get lockjaw. And then I thought, I've got to bring these two things together. And I've got to really understand tetanus now because I can't be walking around saying stupid things like that anymore. So yeah, that's kind of how it began.
Really good. Because I experience the same thing. People come up and they the only way I can explain it is they just want to vomit all over you. They want to tell you everything they've ever known in the last 20 years about everything that you already know and everything that they know about vaccines, and they just blah all over you. You know, it's like taking a 55-gallon drum and dumping it all on you all at once. And when that happens, people just say, "Get me away from this crazy person." So, ask
well, even if you're right, they don't want to hear it because it's too much. It's too much for the uninitiated. For us, it's not too much. Just kind of like, yeah, you know, pass the bean dip, right?
Well, Suzanne, I want to thank you so much. It's, you know, we never get enough time to spend together, and I'm really grateful to have you on the show here today. And I'm also super grateful to have you have written the foreword to my book, Zero Accountability in a Failed System. And you can get the best place to get it right now is the paperback. It doesn't come in as a hardback. It's paperback only. To go out to Amazon, you can get it from Amazon. And if you just put in zero accountability, comma, 10 penny, it'll take you right to the page. So as we close out today, I want to say a special thank you for all of our premium podcast members, all of our 10 penny prime members, and all the people that come to our show every day or as often as you can and follow all the things that we do, because we're really super supportive and really try to bring you good educational content that can keep you floating and keep you going. So with that, I want to close out with one of my favorite verses from the Bible. I close all of my podcasts with, whether they are live or pre-recorded, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until the next time, lean into God, trust him for everything. He won't let you down. Well, have a good week for everybody. And Suzanne, take care. God bless. I can't wait till our paths cross again. And again, thank you so much for your forward and your support of the book. And to everyone else, have a good week, everybody. We'll see you again here 11 a.m. Eastern time. Goodbye and God bless.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body's vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com, and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.